We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
Baby Pictures Famous Dictators Podcast, Episode 9, with me today in the studio. Thinks he's 25 because he wears tampons. Filmmaker and screenwriter Taylor Sardoni.
Spring break.
Thanks for coming back, Taylor.
Thank you for having me.
We're talking about Mad Men. Season 6 premiere was last Sunday. Mm-hmm. For the folks at home that, not only people that haven't seen the episode, the people that haven't seen the show ever.
Kill yourself.
Synopsize Mad Men in less than 5 syllables.
Oof. Abby won.
Oof is one. You have 4 remaining.
Roger.
Two syllables left.
I have 2 syllables left then. Yeah. Ice cream. Oof, Roger.
Ice cream. With that out of the way, let's move on to the episode. We're going to start with the opening. Very distinct opening shot. POV shot, person on the ground being resuscitated from what we can assume is a heart attack.
Yeah.
You hear Megan Draper's scream. You got the POV looking up of a doctor.
Yeah. Who's like coming to the rescue.
Yeah.
It was weird, too, because I don't know about you, but I actually, the very first moment I thought it was Megan on the ground because she was the voice we heard. And it was interesting because I think that it's all, like, you're supposed to think that's Don, you know, and Don's dying.
As I did, yeah.
Right. And I get it, and, like, it only took me a couple seconds, but I really, for that first moment, I was like, oh, something's happening with Megan. You hear Megan say, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I guess that wouldn't make sense if you're, like, passed out or, but I don't know, that may. Anyway, yeah. I think it's interesting starting the whole season from a very subjective point.
And you have to worry about circularity in that issue because it starts with who we assume to be Don Draper on the ground, but it's not. But in the end, will it be? I think it's the question that's supposed to be put into our brain.
And which has been the question the whole time with the opening credits of, you know, somebody jumping out of the thing. You know, is that literal? Is that figurative? But the whole thing of like...
The McGowan theory. The McGowan Mad Men will end with Don Draper throwing himself from a window. But back, so the episode opens with death, or at least the threat of death.
Yeah, absolutely.
So again, Roger's mother's death plays an integral role in this episode. Even Bobby Draper, when he brings out the Sally's friend's violin, says, why do you bring that out, Bobby? He says, because I like it, because it looks like a coffin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's all through the episode, but one of the major complaints about the show, especially last season when it got a little more impressionistic and maybe metaphorical, is that they're too heavy-handed with the symbolism.
Yeah, well, I think, like...
Do you agree?
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, it's super, super over the top. But I think, I don't know, I think it's not... It's in a good way, because for me, you're putting yourself so much into it that it becomes... Okay, so they're aware that it's over the top. We are aware that it's over the top. So, like, we just kind of go with it. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, and what other show do we even question its symbolic import?
Yeah.
Like, what other show is using symbolism on any level?
Also, they follow through. You know, like, we had a whole season about death last season, and they follow through with Lane's suicide.
Second episode, you have Don Draper bored, doodling a noose on his
notebook. Right.
It's there.
It's there,
it's not to no end.
And I heard that Matthew Weiner sent a thing to the critics that said, here's the list of things you're not allowed to talk about in your recaps. And I think that's really interesting. Here's a list of things. And what they said was, I read this thing that one of the, Alan Sepinwall on HitFix.com, he said, it was great, he said that he got that, and it almost spoiled the episode for him, because he saw the things that were so minor, and he was like, oh shit, and he started to, when he was watching the episode, look into those even more, and was like, oh no, I think now that leads me, so.
Skeleton keys.
Yeah, these little tiny things. But yeah, I mean, starting off the episode like that was a little weird for me. I understand why he did it. It was a little strange to then have that first act and then come back to it.
Right.
And then have that weird
flashback. The structure of the episode is very bizarre.
But that's mainly the structure of that first act.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird.
It's a story unto itself.
Yeah, absolutely. But we can talk about
that.
We're
going on to Hawaii now.
Yeah.
From that POV shot, we go to Don and Megan on a paid vacation by Sheraton Hotels in Hawaii.
Yeah, Don Draper reading Inferno.
Yes. What do you think is the most important takeaway from this sequence?
I think it's...
think is the reasoning they open there?
Well, I think it's really important that they open there. He's reading the Inferno, right, about hell, and it's like one of those things, and he doesn't speak, and we don't get, like, for being very subjective early on, we get a very objective view on him, even though we have these subjective shots of him looking at Megan's stomach, which I thought it was like that was the most fascinating part of the whole entire episode for me, was how he keeps staring at her stomach.
Yeah. In hell while in heaven.
In hell while in heaven. That's the thing. Is it his paradise or is it his hell?
Yeah.
And we don't know, and we can't, you know. So I think that having a whole, it's very, very, you know, we've seen it time and time again, but it's very brave to have like a whole chunk where your main character's not speaking.
Yeah.
You know, because
Megan is almost, if you're going to get into the heavy Inferno stuff, is basically the Virgil to his mm-hmm. Dante that he's following. She's mm-hmm. the only one who interacts with any of the concierge people,
yeah.
The people that even that they have dinner with. The woman comes up to talk to her about the show. Mm-hmm, Don mm-hmm. doesn't say a word through the whole process.
He doesn't say, and everybody's people are talking to him. People are like he has the chance to, and yet he's very much just kind of like he's observing, just like we're supposed to be
right.
observing. So I think that's. That's really important. I think that, and for me, that's the takeaway. The takeaway for me is, we're watching a character. Is this his heaven or is this his hell? And you know what? We go throughout the whole entire episode thinking like that.
It's his hell. It's his hell.
Oh, yeah. No, it's completely his hell.
Very much
even
so.
Though he comes out of it, we can talk more about it later, but he comes out of it saying, oh, it was the best place. It was
this,
so
this
great.
This we're going to talk about later.
Yeah, and so I think that is really important to understand,
yes.
like, what is his state of mind, you know?
Right. And I think we should also talk about the historical baggage of Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
that it is where America ends.
Exactly.
It's the final state,
yeah.
so to speak. False paradise, if you want to call it that. And then we also get some weird recurrence, which recurrence happened a lot in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not only arcing back to the show itself, but maybe ideas and themes they've explored before. Later, when he sees the... The private first class Dinkins, whose wedding
he walks
the woman down the aisle.
I thought it was
the beach aisle.
Really,
he looks a lot like Roger.
He looks like a lot like Roger, yeah. Which is important. And I also think that, like, you know, as much as it is a reflection to look at, like, okay.
He's also sort of like a wiseacre, like Roger.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that, like, as much as it's a reflection on Don looking back in his past and Dick Whitman and, like, seeing himself, I feel like it's much more about this mentor in this old... I mean, in this young
right.
man, this old soul in this young man, making him kind of see...
Well, he says it, too. What goes... I believe in what goes around comes
right.
around. One day, I'll be the guy who can't sleep talking to strangers in the bar.
Right, and I think that's super, super important, because
yeah.
there's a lot in this show that I feel like... It's a cycle. And if they're all moving
yeah.
in the place of each of themselves.
Right. Peggy becomes Don. Don becomes Roger.
Roger becomes
Cooper.
And Cooper is this magical thing in the
yeah.
sky.
He's a
mascot. Like, he's gone. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, and I also think it's interesting because, Peggy obviously is transitioning into becoming Don again. We can talk about that later. But I also think it's interesting that Pete is also transitioning into being Don in a much different way.
But also half Roger. He's sort of a...
Yeah. That's true. But the way I see it is that, like, they're being split off. Peggy is taking all these things from Don
yeah.
and moving on. And because she has a backbone to herself,
yeah. while
she will succeed.
While Pete is sort of stuck.
Right.
In him,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is interesting.
Yeah, and just more on the recurrence. When he first sees Roger and gets back, he says, oh, Don, you have a blue drink and the white
yeah,
sand.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Megan's
yeah.
drink in the beginning is... Blue drink and
right.
the white sand. And just
right.
one more rehash thing is that Hawaii, we get a lot of Elvis.
Yes.
The woman on the beach who's marrying Dinkins has the sort of Lisa Marie
yes.
beehive haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Don sort of dressed in those weird Graceland era
mm-hmm.
Plaid suits throughout it. And the episode ends with an Elvis song. And Hawaii for Elvis is, of course,
yeah,
Elvis
yeah,
live
yeah.
from Honolulu. You get the set. He did it on satellite, I
mm-hmm,
think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's like the first time that Elvis sort of went back and revisited all he did
right.
and sort of plateaued right there.
Right.
And then it was all... Fat Elvis ordering the sandwiches from Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, man, how about Elvis in the CIA? People don't know. He pretended to be fat, like Fat Betty, and then he's in the CIA right now.
Right. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff. It's a packed
first act.
Packed 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's a lot.
There's more in the first 10 minutes of that show than you will ever see in the entirety of Fringe.
Yeah. And the stomachs. He's always constantly looking at her stomach, and it's like, is it supposed to suggest that she is pregnant? Is it supposed to suggest that he sees a younger woman and he sees who she is in her waist,
yeah.
you know? And
well, she has previously said she doesn't want to have kids.
Right, right. exactly.
And
so that's,
her
that's,
mother always brings that up when she's around.
Right.
It's like, you don't want to give him a family.
Yeah, so I think that's important that, like, it's a lot about, I mean, obviously the insecurity is about your mom. In this whole episode
yes.
with Roger's mom dying, with them bringing that up, you know, Don throws up at the moment that
yeah.
she, that Roger is his aunt. His aunt is talking fondly about his mom and
the
him.
The end of last season was a lot of the brother that hanged himself.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I think that, like, I really truly think that this show is going through Don Draper's family. You know what I mean? It's going through the, his different family members and how he's affected by, like, their outcome.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I think it's really important to understand how Don sees Megan. You know, Megan, he was not attracted to her until Megan...
Why would you be?
Right, with those teeth. No, I have to say that she is beautiful in this first episode.
I don't know about that.
Oh, my God.
Makeup on the balcony?
No. I really, they did it for me. I was like, I finally am on her team because she has some horse teeth, but she looked good this episode. No, but I think
not
it's...
Not to be superficial.
Right, I know. I'm sorry.
This is a very adult podcast.
But I really, really think that it's super important to understand that, like, he didn't see her as anything until she cleans up Sally's spilled...
Right.
Or whatever. The milkshake. She cleans that up. She is...
she drank it.
Yeah, she's consoling to Sally in that episode where Sally comes. So, it's very obvious
she's a much better mother than Betty.
Than Betty will ever be.
Yeah. It's all mother.
And think about it. At the end of last season, she transitions into this actress. Yeah. And in this episode,
she's
the actress. She's
someone else.
Right, and so he sees this younger girl, this sexy, attractive girl that we would, superficially, will think of and say, oh, well, she's just this, like, hot woman on TV. You know? That's not who he sees right now. Yeah. He sees, like, somebody that he can't become close to.
Right.
And who does he end up having? And we can talk about it more, but who does he end up having to
fight
with?
Don't spoil it for anyone.
A freaking mom.
Yeah.
A woman who's all about being a mother. So, yeah, I think it's important.
So before we transition to the main plot points of the episode, we're going to talk about the best addition to Mad Men in probably a long time. The greatest actor of our generation, James Walk of Lone Star fame.
Fantastic.
For anyone who doesn't know what Lone Star is, it's our favorite show of all time.
It's so good.
Probably one of the best shows ever made. It ran for 2 episodes on Fox 3 years ago. Yeah. My blog was actually started as a way to keep Lone Star alive. It was started as a Lone Star support group after it was canceled. But his character is Bob Benson, one of the new account guys. What do you envision Bob's role in the show and his role in future episodes.
They really bring him in strong.
Yeah.
If you know, he has those 2 coffees and he says, "Oh, I always get 2 because I don't like to share." And where do the 2 coffees end up? 1 in Draper's hand and 1 in friggin' Pete's hand. And I think it's great directing because all you see, they don't cut to it. All you see is in that one medium shot of Pete. He just lifts the cup up and takes a sip, and you're like, "Ooh." You know, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!" So
any other show, it'd be like, "Wait a second, where'd you get that coffee?"
Exactly. I think they did that really well.
From Benson,
right?
He sends the meat tray to the funeral.
Yeah, that was a move.
Yeah.
That was a move, and Ken's attitude towards him.
Yeah,
he's so aggressive towards this guy.
Well, this is the guy who's going to become the Ken.
Exactly.
But I think.
But I also think that's another one who, like, he's becoming the Pete. You know, like, he is a Pete-type character.
Well, I think the Benson character will be, as maybe was somewhat of a thing in this, or a theme in this episode, more a sort of out there, commercialized, monetized Pete. That he is a social climber, but instead of, like, where Pete was trying to be sort of subtler and maybe more modest about it, he is a social climber through and through.
Yeah,
corporate ideal of what you want in an employee.
Right, exactly.
He's trying
to
climb the ladder as quickly as possible.
Just as we were saying about Mad Men, they're not trying to hide how over the top they are with the symbolism.
Yeah.
They're not trying to hide it. He's not trying to hide it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is the...
As before, with Pete, who sort of was reverent. He wouldn't talk to Draper in the beginning.
Right.
Like, even the past season when he goes to his house, like, you know this means a lot that you didn't
matter
for me.
Yeah.
They've known each other for 15 years.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, he is definitely the face of what they want.
If Ginsberg is the next evolutionary step in the creative mind, I think he's more of the next step in the business mind.
So
he will
corporate.
Maybe supplant Cosgrove, who is actually the only, maybe, through and through good person on the show.
No,
he has no real moral failings. He won't even bring his father-in-law in.
Yeah, But remember when
he's a writer?
Sci-fi writing? Yeah, that was
I
really
love
great.
The sci-fi.
Yeah, that was good.
Author of The Man with the Miniature Orchestra. and I also think it's an interesting thing because I think Lone Star maybe came about because they pitched it as sort of a modern-day Draper scenario. That this was a guy
double lives,
living 2 lives at the same time. But the problem was that he was probably too good. He legitimately was in love, I think, with both of the women.
Yeah,
and
well, that's the thing, is that with Lone Star, if we can for a moment talk about how amazing Lone Star is. The thing with Lone Star is that is that people didn't like you just said, people didn't like that they were allowed to relate to and enjoy and like and invite this kind of person into a living room, a person who has two lives, a person who's like cheating on his wives, you know. We look at that and we think that's terrible. But he was a genuine two sides of the coin. You know, he wasn't tricking anybody.
And if we're never keyed in that they're an anti-hero, if we're supposed to believe he's a hero with actual fans, like Draper is an anti-hero, Soprano is an anti-hero.
Right.
Walter White, anti-hero, even though clearly. He's not really a sexualized character.
No, but he clearly is.
He wears moccasins too often to have any sort of...
Exactly.
And his wife can kick his ass.
Oh, Shrek.
Shout out to Shrek. Our Breaking Bad podcast is coming up in a few months.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Into the episode proper. What are we supposed to take away from Don's pitch to Sheraton? His relationship with Dr. Rosencrantz and Berg.
Oh my gosh, that's my favorite scene in this episode was his pitch.
The pitch, right.
It was so funny. Because when
Stan is the perfect button on that scene.
Oh yeah, he really is. And he's high as hell. He's the same. He's like, I thought it was great. But the best part is that he genuinely
yes,
believed.
He's
and
out
could
on
not
he's,
see
he's
it.
He's out on it.
He could not see right there clearly. Yeah. And when they're talking about it, but when they show the speck that they have
with the tie that looks like a noose and very much is drawn exactly like a noose.
It was so funny. And there you go. That is Mad. That going back. That's Mad Men being so over the top. But you know how they get away with that? Their main character who did that doesn't understand and doesn't see it that way. So we're laughing not just at the fact that the writers have clearly created a very obvious suicide metaphor.
Yes.
But that Don Draper's like, whoa, what? I'm not talking about that. Like, yes, you are. That was my favorite scene in the whole episode.
Yeah, and as that scene is sort of not only a furtherance of Don losing his edge and he's out of touch, mm-hmm. this was all through last season, mm-hmm. that he doesn't have the sort of vocabulary to express his experience anymore. It's also, I think, hearkening back to Hawaii, that he's sort of attempting to manufacture mm-hmm. experience now. He feels as though he has experienced something otherworldly or profound. When in fact he is not.
Otherworldly is the key thing because he is the astronaut and they are all aliens to him.
Now,
he is, you know what I mean? Yeah, now. He is the one who comes home and they say to him, like, look at you, you're so tan. Look at you, you have a new haircut. He is not, he is different.
Yeah,
he's
he can't communicate
physically.
That back as opposed to where he could before.
Right. And I think that's going into a little bit about his relationship with Dr. Rosencrantz, which is like super crazy to me that they did this. Everything's about, you know, Mad Men. This season we're going to talk about, we're going to have a conversation with our first season. We're going to look back at who, you know, who our characters are, who they've become, if they're even changing. They have all these physical changes, which we'll talk about like each one of them and their hair and their whatever. But it's all about like they're trying to become the person that they're not yet, you know?
Or they're trying to be the person that they were. You get Betty. There's the scene in the first season where she gets pulled over
mm-hmm,
and she
mm-hmm.
guiles her way out of it because she's beautiful. And
right.
She's not beautiful anymore. And
so
she's
reverted back.
Ticket.
Yeah.
Draper in the first season is the person he befriends is Jewish
mm-hmm.
and is not of his world.
Right.
And he's trying to sort of do that again with the doctor, although of course in a much different role because it's not a woman.
Yeah, and I think it's crazy that this is the first friend we've seen, or anybody that like Don Draper has referred to as friend.
Right.
Everybody is business acquaintances. Everybody is enemies, or everybody is I need to get them to get something.
Yeah.
I need to Draper them to get something. This is the first person we've seen he refer to as a friend. He gives the gift to
the camera, the capturing experience,
right?
Metaphor.
And look at him. He is a child. He can't do it.
Yeah.
He's fumbling all over himself. And I think that. To me, what's like the most thing I took away from this episode, to me, is yes, he sleeps with the doctor's wife at the end, right?
Yeah.
Because she's the mother. And
right.
and a very shocking line that I thought was actually really well done is that she says, you know, well, what do you want to be doing? I don't want to be doing this anymore.
Right.
He says it candidly to her. But the thing is, think about it. Yes, this is the whole Don is going back and reverting back. Last season, he was faithful to his wife because she was the mother that he never had,
right?
And now that she has gone on and her duties are no longer needed, they don't show her with the kids this episode because it's, you know, now that she's moved on to this actress and she's reverted, you know, reversed back to this 18, 17, 16-year-old girl, nymph to him, right? Now he doesn't want her, he wants the mother. Well, what happens? It's not so much about Don going back and starting to cheat again. I feel it's more about Don moving on and learning how to do it in a new way. And he can't cheat on a friend's wife. And that's the whole thing, is that, like, he's doing it, he's cheating again, but with, you know, old Don, Don cheats and he moves on. Don doesn't cheat and he's nervous about how his friend's gonna feel, or nervous about the husband, or... And so I feel like it's a new transition.
Yeah, I think it's also a power dynamic thing, because the doctor is the only one with the ability to save people.
Yeah.
And Don, even in the scene where he's resuscitating, you see Don in the back and he's sort of completely helpless and aghast. And having that power over that person who can actually save people is something I think he needs, or at least maybe his need to save himself.
Yeah, and I think the episode's called Doorways. It's all about, you know, doorways. The guy, the doorman, literally opens the door for them and is leading them in and dies. Like, you have to do it yourself. And I feel like that's his problem, is that Don is trying to grasp at, like, going through the doorway into the next room. And he can't get there. And he's stuck, you know? And he's doing the things that he knows how to do. And the things that he can't do, he's, like, grasping at, and they're getting out of his hand. And that is, like, friends. He doesn't understand how to have a friend. Peggy is his closest friend.
Yeah, but she left him.
But she left him, you know what I mean?
I'm going to get into that later.
Yeah.
Roger now.
Oh, Roger. God, Roger. Let's stay for another 2 hours about Roger.
The popularization of psychotherapy sort of becomes foregrounded in this episode. We have Roger, who now is a therapist. Roger. We're going to go all Roger right now. Yeah. Roger and the therapist, Roger and his mother, Roger and the shoe shiner. Your thoughts, my thoughts being Roger forever.
Yeah,
this is Roger one of the great forever. TV characters of all time, and he's... for never winning the supporting actor, which we're fine with because we're such Aaron Paul acolytes.
Totally.
But this is one of the best characters ever on television.
This is, and it's a role of a lifetime. Yes. Like, he's having a lot of fun with it. No, the whole thing's about performances. He's in his, you know, he's in his psychiatrist's office and he's getting analyzed and he's making jokes. He's putting on the performance because what does he do to everybody? He puts on the performance and everybody loves it. And is charmed by him. And it's funny, too, because the doctor's charmed by him, too. Mm-hmm. You can tell. He even says, like, I told you, like, I wouldn't laugh anymore, despite how funny some of the things are. Like, he's saying to him, like, don't worry, I get it, you're great.
And the way that that character balances the utter sadness of his existence with this veneer of irony.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, earth mantle thick irony.
Mm-hmm.
And when he finally finds out the shoe shiner is dead, even though you can maybe... foresee, like, oh, I know where this is going, and they're going to use this. But, I mean, his face is like a plastic bag being torn by a homeless person. That's how sad I felt.
That's the thing. This episode, I wasn't too excited about him where he ended crying about the shoe shiner, because I thought it was so obvious. But his acting saved it.
Yeah.
His performance is amazing.
His face looks nothing like Roger.
Right.
Morphs into something else. It's like scary creature.
Absolutely. I think I just saw it coming. So that's, I just was like, eh. But no,
see,
I mean,
that's where the heavy handedness comes in. How many times someone comes to be like, oh, where's my shoe shiner? I thought I told you to call the shoe shiner 4 or 5 times.
That and the whole friggin' scene with the photographer saying to Don, like, just be yourself.
Who
and
are
I was like,
you? Who is Don
that,
Draper?
That made me very upset. I did not like that.
And it's right there with Roger looking up at Joan on the staircase. He's like, I don't want to follow that scene.
Well, the funny thing is that if you, like, think about it, it's interesting what they did or did not do with Joan in this episode. They put her up.
That's one of the continuing things of the show, is that Joan is so underutilized as a character. And even though, because that was supposed to be a bystander character,
mm-hmm.
and sort of evolve into something
more,
and they had to give her storylines, but she's so good.
I also really liked Harry when he walks in with his new hairdo.
How everyone in the entire show hates Harry Crane is another
reason,
great, and also the running joke of we've never seen his wife still. And
I forget,
where's Jennifer?
Yeah.
Jennifer can't come.
But it's really good that when he walks in, he's like, oh, what do you guys take a picture? And it's funny because think about this. Harry runs the TV thing.
Invented his own shop.
He's like up there.
He's a weasel. He's a weasel.
Oh, yeah, he is. But he does a lot, right? And Joan is now, and look, Joan did some things to get to where she is. Does Joan deserve to, you know, like, but he does work, right? And I feel like it's not Joan's fault that she is underutilized. You know what I mean? Like, if she was given the opportunity, she probably could do something 10 times better than Harry or anybody in there, but she's not given the chance to. She is, even though, the males are taking pictures, go up on the staircase and, you know, hold the step. That's where we need you.
She always knew.
Which
how to play the game.
Yeah.
She always knew how to play the game better. I mean, Peggy never did because she wasn't suited for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Joan always knew the limits of where she can go. Maybe that's what's appealing about
her. And I wonder how far they'll take her. You know, I wonder if her sleeping with the Jaguar guys to get that position, if that's just kind of like one more step, and if she'll go even further, because there are some things that she could, you know, like, who knows? Or if she kind of looked like, I would very much like to see her and Peggy's relationship and how they were and their roles reverse their power dynamic, dynamic from the very first episode. Like, that would be very, very, you know, like, we'll see, but they're two, you know, she's a very, very interesting character that I really feel like they need to, I don't like when they have, what's her name? Red. What's her name?
Joan.
I don't like when they have Joan episodes.
Oh, you don't?
Well, I do, but I just don't like it because I'm like, it feels as if she's an absence when she's not in the episode. So when they finally have their episodes, like, okay, now I'm going to get my Joan fill. Like, I wish it was, you know, I wish it
more
was
more dispersed
in
or
there.
Bigger presence. Maybe.
Yeah. Because even Pete, with that, even when they don't do Pete episodes, he's there. You could feel him.
It's good. We mentioned Peggy. We're going to go into Peggy now. We get a lot of her new job at whoever the fuck in Shaw.
Oh, God.
Did you like, I mean, there was one moment in this storyline that redeemed it for me, but until then, I thought the moment when she's looking at the boyfriend and he's vibing with his Beats on Dre, okay, this is the one sort of glimmer of hope in this episode, this dour-toned, very somber episode.
Look.
She's the only person that's happy, or resembling happiness.
Oh, absolutely. Look, last season, that boyfriend was all about, like, you know, how could you play into the corporate game, how are you going to... And now he's just kind of like, I'm going to put the headphones
on,
I'll help
he's
you.
He's on for the ride now that
and
she's paying the rent.
It's great. I love that. Yeah, I did not mind it, but it was also kind of heavy-handed. Because she delivered. She's a great actress. She's on Top of the Lake right now. Have you seen this?
I have not.
Jane Campion.
I watched some of The West Wing. She's on that.
Yes, she is. Jane Campion did a 7-part miniseries for the Sundance Channel. And it's very much like The Killing. It's about it like that.
Sounds horrible.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, is it?
It's so good. I'm not a big fan of Jane Campion's work. This is really great. And she plays the lead on it. It's about a 12-year-old girl who gets pregnant and goes missing. And she wants to find her. Oh, it really is fantastic. So she has two shows on right now that are very, very good shows and good roles.
Good job, Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah, she's doing well.
Sorry about your divorce from Fred Armisen, though.
I think you're all right on that one. You made out well on that one. But I think... Look, I very much liked, even though it was heavy-handed, I very much liked her Don lines when she says, well, if you don't know the difference between an idea and a pitch, then I have no use for you.
That was a good, that reminded me of the Don, where she's crying to Don, and she's like, well, why would I do this? Like, that's what the money's for.
Right. Yeah,
there are a lot of Don lines. I can see you and I can hear you, get in here.
Oh,
a lot of
that
Draper.
Is amazing. That was one of my favorite lines of all time. No, but the, you know, there's a thing on Vulture right now. If you go on Vulture.com, there's a great thing. Peggy leaning in. It's like a supercut of her leaning in. Like, you know, that's her move. But, I mean, you know, yeah, she's becoming Don. It wasn't a very well-done storyline, but I did very much like that moment with her and her boyfriend. It was really cool.
Great scene.
And I like the line when the boss says, you have a group of people, you know, your workers down there, you might want to tell them they can go home. And she's, oh, they know. No, they don't. I like that,
the disconnect.
She's doesn't
no longer
understand.
Able
exactly.
to think in that mindset of the copywriter
and
already.
And with power.
Yeah.
She has so much power, you need to understand how to communicate that. So I love that. But yeah.
And lastly, we have sort of Fat Birdie, Frances Draper. Did you enjoy her storyline? Did you think it was unnecessary?
I would say that I enjoyed Betty's storyline more so than I've enjoyed any Betty storyline, and yet I still didn't think
bar.
It was that good.
It's a low bar.
Right.
The writers, I don't think, have ever known how to make that character compelling.
And they treat her like shit, too.
Yes, they
do. I feel really bad for her.
She's given almost no agency. She's really defined almost entirely by her appearance.
Yeah, but you know what? What's interesting is that they're doing something there. Betty is not a mother, right? She's not a mother to her own kids. But you know who she is a mother to? Other kids. She's a mother to, what's the kid's name?
Glenn.
She's a mother to, in a weird way, but she's a mother to
Glenn.
Your
hair is beautiful, you look like a princess, can I have some?
Sure. and she's a mother to, now I think that this was a bit of an abrupt storyline with this new added girl, with the violin, and she's not going to get into Julian.
Going to Squatter's house.
Going to Squatter's house. And here's where I think the Mad Men is a bit kind of like faulted, is that they are masters at the world that they've created from the world that already existed, right? when we're in, no matter what, when we're in that advertising agency, when we're dealing with these characters, when they're in their characters' homes, when they're in Manhattan, when they're in New... That, they are masters. When they kind of go outside of that...
They go to the Hare Krishna.
When they go to the Hare Krishna, when they go to, when in the first season, when they take Don to, like, that bar with the guy, the
poet.
Yeah.
When he's reading Meditations in the
Yeah, Mercy. it's a bit as if, like, this is the thesis part of our research paper. Like, it doesn't kind of
This is where
up.
Art interferes. Art and religion, and we get into big topics.
Yeah, and I don't love it. And I didn't love the squatters. It was kind of like, we're going to do squatters this episode.
Yeah.
It felt really weird.
This is happening. It's like, this was happening, too.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about it. I forget who it was. It was one of my friends here at Columbia. It was very funny because they said, I know who it is. Anyway, she says, she goes, I thought it was really weird that Betty comes home and she lies down on that bed and Francis is like, where have you been? Not, where have you been for 12 hours? and Betty, she goes, I'm sitting as Betty. I sit on my bed. I'm disgusting, and I'm sitting on my bed with my husband in that jacket and all that stuff. She goes, I'm going to go home and take a shower. I thought it was like a really good...
This is a sort of a new Betty, the rape joke.
The
we could talk
joke.
About the rape joke for a while.
So I have to say that
there's a lot packed into that rape joke sequence.
Yeah. That was another moment that took me out of it, just like that very first moment. I actually was like, is this a SNL joke? Like, I thought it was a Mad Men commercial as a joke. I really did.
Right.
It comes out of nowhere. I think it's great. I think it's really funny. I actually think what's more appalling and what's more funny is Francis's reaction. She's like, well, do you want to go in there and rape her? And he's like, no. not really, but no. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he...
Well, that isn't what he ever wanted from Betty. He never wanted to have to think twice.
Exactly.
Or to be put on,
exactly,
like,
yeah.
Not to be in very solid ground with her.
So I have to say, I did read an interview with Matthew Weiner that said, oh, no, that's just Betty being funny.
Is it?
No, I think the there's more into it.
Never had a sense of humor.
Right, I think there's more into it. But I like the idea of, like, let's make Betty funny. What would Betty joke about? Raping her daughter's
Well, there's still a lot packed in there, like the jealousy of her youth.
Oh, of course.
And this opportunity that she has when she sits down with the girl. It's sort of like, I'm not going to go to New York for 1 year and then settle into this track.
Right.
This track of whatever the conservative heteronormative
lifestyle. I thought it was so cool that Betty had always hated that Don was a liar and that he was good for lying. I think there might be a quote in there in that first or second season where that she says that to him, like,
right.
I don't like that you're so good at lying or whatever.
Yeah, it's in there.
It's in there, right? And what does the friend say to her when they're sitting out there?
No.
Betty comes up with the lie real quick. She goes, just tell him that you didn't get that you did get in, but you decided to wait until... She comes up with it like that. She's good at lying. And I think that that's really interesting that she's another shade of Don. Don is like... Don doesn't know who he is, and he's trying to find himself. But look at all the people around Don, and they're all reflections of him,
yeah.
You know? So yeah, I thought that there were some redeeming things. I thought it was much better than other Betty episodes. I also very much enjoyed Betty does not have the fat suit on. But she has the thinly fat. I feel like, because she's very skinny in real life, I feel as if they were like, she was like, all right,
I'm sure by the end of the season she'll be skinny again.
Yeah. But I just like that, like, just from a production standpoint. When you're putting on a fat suit, you're putting on a fat suit. But when you're putting on, like, a thinly chubby suit, we just have to put some stuff on your neck and just make you look a little fat. I feel bad for her, you know?
I feel bad for her. The hair looks horrible.
Shout out to the greatest line of the entire night.
Best line of the night. Bobby Draper. Robert Draper. I hate it, you're ugly.
Runs out of the room. Thank you, Matthew Weiner. That was the best part of the entire episode.
Dead on. Looking ahead. Into the future. What storyline are you most interested in seeing develop?
Pete's sideburns.
Betty Francis's weight loss.
No, Pete's
Stan's beard growth.
No, I think I'm really excited to what they do with Jimmy Wolk. I'm excited for Bob Benson. That's a great character. It scared me a little bit, though, when I saw Ginsburg this episode. It was just like
see,
one of
Ginsburg
the guys.
Ginsburg is mine. Ginsburg is...
Well,
I want to see what they do with
that's
Ginsburg.
That's what I'm saying. Right? I loved him last season. I didn't like him at first, obviously.
Oh, you didn't?
And no, I thought
that character was amazing.
I didn't love him at first. It felt too
Jewish.
Not Jewish. Insert this character into their world. They did a great job with him. That sci-fi episode where he's looking out the window.
I'm from Mars.
Yeah, it's one of the great. I mean, like, I love that episode. I was a little nervous when I saw him in this episode, and he just was one of the guys.
Getting stoned. And
I was like, oh no, I hope that he doesn't just blend in, because Bob might be that character that we see him go through this thing, and then he's just one of, you know. I'm excited for that storyline. I'm less excited for Betty. I'm excited for Roger. I'm excited for Cooper. To bring back Cooper in some way.
He's dying this season.
I don't think he'll ever die.
No?
I don't think they'll kill him. Really? I really don't.
We've been expecting it for so long.
Exactly. I think that he's as good as dead.
Yeah.
I think he's the magic person in the sky. I think that they're like, that's it. I mean, I might be wrong.
That's right.
I've been saying that. First season, I was like, oh, he'll die. Every episode, I was like, he'll die this episode. And I feel like we all are expecting it so much that they're not gonna give us the one character who we know is going to die, you know? Or maybe he's jumping out of the window at the end, and that's him.
Shout out to Cooper. Let's see what else to be
got. Can we also talk about Sally's voice?
The Darth Vader voice?
Whatever, Mom.
Sally's gone emo.
I like when she was talking on the phone. It's really weird because Betty stands at the doorway.
The doorway.
Looking at her child.
The genius thing about naming an episode doorway is that there's no way to have a room without a doorway. It's always there
exactly.
As a motif.
It was really weird, though, because Sally... I don't know. This might be looking too much into it. But Sally's on the phone. She holds up her finger to her mom and says, 1 second, and then shuts the door on her face. And I was like, that's a weird... It's so much like the teenager rebelling, but in such a subtle way that she was literally like, I don't... Hold on. Wait 1 second. And then she shuts the door in her face. Hold on. Wait 1 second. Ha 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 ha.
Right.
You know, like, I don't need you. So I thought that was kind of cool.
And then we have our secret plot point that she's talking to Roger on the phone.
Yeah, can we talk about that for a second?
If you want.
I don't think she's talking to him on the phone. I do think that if you remember that episode...
Where they go to the gala.
Where they go to the gala.
And she sees him getting the blowjob.
She sees him getting the blowjob, and she looks up at him. I very much think that they will... Look, that is a joke that you said, that you know she's talking to him. It was a very funny joke. Who are the two characters that we see on the phone
Roger.
And we don't... Roger and Sally.
Yeah.
And Roger's talking to somebody about going to, like, a sex key party.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, like, he says, like,
they won't even notice you're gone.
If you're gone, no, won't even notice. I'm, like, you, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he says, like, something like, I won't be able to get in without you.
Right.
Like, they need you.
Yeah.
But me, they don't, like, I, you know.
There is a hint given while he's in the psychoanalyst's office that he says, she's only 29.
Yeah.
That was where I was like, oh, maybe I don't know.
No. All I'm saying, I'm not saying that they're talking to each other, but I'm saying that it's very specific. You know,
her sexuality is linked to Roger.
Exactly.
That was her first experience.
And they're both on the phones talking secretly to other people. I think it's important that, like, they're both just in that category. Matthew Weiner does everything on purpose. So, like, we see two characters on the phone. That's important. Not that they're talking to each other, but I really do think that we're going to get an episode in the near future that is a slight reverse of that episode at
the
gala. That Roger will now be looking at her in a different way. She's young. She's very young. Like, it would be scandalous, like, if they did that. But I very much feel like it's not going to be a big thing. There's not going to be... But he's going to see her sexualized. And I feel like that also... She very much reminds me of his daughter. Which, we didn't even talk about the River of Jordan friggin' jar of water.
Which she leaves.
That is so important that she leaves.
Very great.
And in the thing, the next thing is that... I got my wife getting me, my ex-wife going one way, and my daughter going the other way. Yeah, they are pulling Roger apart. But, like, I don't know. You know, Roger doesn't have Joan anymore. He doesn't have his wife. He doesn't have what's her name that he just created into her?
Jane.
Jane and Joan. Important. No, but I just think it's, you know, like, he doesn't have that outlet anymore. And I just feel like there might be a keep your eyes out. I'm saying a subtle suggestion
it's coming.
That he looks
it's
at
coming.
Her.
It's coming. They're,
you know?
They're equating those characters
exactly.
In our brain.
Exactly.
Episode ends. Don is back to philandering.
Yeah.
The adulterer Don Draper is back, but not in any way. We don't get the boys are back in town secretly.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
It's on a very down note that this is revealed to us. And this, like, Draper is done with it, and I feel like we're supposed to be done with it, but he has no other means to understanding himself. What do you think drives it?
Again, I feel like it's very much about he has reverted back, but in a way that he's unfamiliar with. It's like time has moved on, so he has to move on,
right.
And he can't. He's reverting back. What happens when you revert back? You don't know how. You're fumbling all over yourself. So him, like, trying to be the friend of the woman who is married to that guy, right? Whatever. Does that just make sense? Anyway.
Me.
Him trying to be friends with this woman's husband, it kind of shows a mark that, like, he is trying to change. He is trying to learn how to do it, and he's not functioning anymore. He's not doing it.
Yeah.
I also thought it was a very, very odd sequence that he goes into the closet and gets the guy skis with him and sees him off.
Right.
I didn't know if that was supposed to be just so that we see the guy leaving, giving him that like moment, and then him going up to the woman.
On the one hand, it's the logistical thing, making sure the guy leaves.
Right.
On the other hand, it's how does this guy live? And I feel like it's Draper trying to understand what it's like to be an actual good husband.
Yeah, and
or
look,
a person.
And, no, good person.
Yeah.
That guy, and they made it very specific, that guy's putting on fucking skis
to help
walk
people.
Out to go save people.
Yeah.
And Draper's going to go up to sleep with his wife. So I think that, you know, that's where they're pointing at. I don't know, that didn't, that, to me, I kind of was like, yeah, no, I get that. I didn't really feel as if that was the thing. To me, it was more about Don's and obsession with death still.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You know,
I feel like the death drive is very much in that as well. It's always him preempting being left by leaving people. I feel like, I mean, his mother left him before he had even a thought. He loses his brother in the first season.
Yeah, that was also.
And when does he fall in love with Megan? When he's forced to confront that the woman, the original Draper's wife,
died.
He's back in California.
Right.
That's
when
him and Megan get bonded. And you could say him and Betty got bonded because she was an actress on his first, his first ad campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when Dick Whitman died, Don Draper was born, and then he was bound to Betty.
Right.
Until his brother died, and then he was bound to no one, and then he was now bound to Megan, and now that Lane is dead, he's been sort of
rebounded.
So then
who's the next? Who is the next?
It feels like he's always moving.
No, they thought Pete, last season, they thought Pete was going to kill himself. That was the
thing. Pete was going to punch the fuck out of him.
Yeah.
He got the shit kicked out of him last season.
By Lane.
But I think it's always him fearing losing Megan is now an independent person as opposed to being dependent on him. And his fear of losing her, that she's now become this actress who doesn't know her anymore. She's leaving her. There's even a sort of hint that she has this intimate relationship with Robert, one of her directors
or something.
You can see Don, and even when she's dancing with the...
With the hula guy.
You see Don looking, he could see that she is now has power to interact with the world.
Right.
And has become sort of other entity.
Oh, she has transformed over the...
Yeah.
Her story, yeah, she's transformed.
There's a lot there. There's a thesis paper in there. We'll get on it. Final question. The question on everybody's mind. Who had the best hair upgrade?
I mean, Harry's was pretty strong. Roger's was great, but Roger's was subtle.
Subtle, yeah.
It was just a little bit longer.
Right.
Yeah. Pete had those sideburns.
Does Pete qualify, though, with the amount of hair that he's lost?
He lost hair and he has the sideburns.
There's a great scene. I think it's the first episode of last season where at the party, and Pete says hi to Megan and Don, and he walks away, and she just goes, "Is he balding?"
Yeah. I don't know. For anybody who doesn't know, you should look into what's his name, Vincent Carter.
His actual
his life.
Well, he's married to
now
Alison Bechdel.
Yeah, now he is. But before he was living in his car.
He was living in a hut.
He had long hair before
Mad
Men. Like he was off the grid completely.
Yeah, no phone, no computer, nothing.
I think
in between seasons.
I think I'm not saying I don't know. There's something there in that. He changed the least out of all
right.
them, physically and emotionally. He's gone through some things, but he's still, the same good old
And
Pete.
Draper is exactly the same.
Exactly.
He's the only one still wearing that same black suit. Like, even Roger has a 70s sort of suit.
I don't know, I think it's going to be interesting to see them push into that new age of the 70s, however far they do go. I think it's going to be interesting to see who's the one that will embrace it and who's going to be stuck.
Draper is stuck.
Oh, Draper's stuck.
He's
stuck,
very,
definitely.
Very
stuck. What I'm saying is I think that Pete, I think we will see a transformation that Pete will go like that. Just
become
like what's
a
his
hippie?
Name? Yeah, just like what's his name? With Harry Christian.
Oh,
he switched on a dime and we were like, wait, we haven't seen you in 8 episodes and then you're that.
Yeah. What the fuck was that character's name? Kinsey.
George. Yeah, Kinsey. How can we forget? It's Kinsey. He's wearing the scarf in season 2.
He's reciting T.S. Eliot in the lounge.
But yeah, I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if we just have like a Pete meltdown and we end with Pete just drastically different than who he is now.
Yeah.
Because the only way to shed, he has to shed his skin,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I'm giving it to Abe, Peggy's boyfriend.
Yeah, that's great.
The
hair.
Giant mustache. Yeah. He looks like in the board game Guess Who. He's like the person you would guess first. Slap it down.
Yeah, yeah,
the huge mustache, the flowing red locks.
No, he's great.
Any closing comments?
No, I think it's going to be...
For the folks at home.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting season. It really is drastically different than how it started.
Let's close about the horrible AMC ad campaign now.
Which one?
How bad is it?
Something more?
Something more.
Something more.
We have 6 shows now.
Yeah, they're trying.
Every show on the channel is bad except the 2 first ones they had.
What, Breaking Bad and that?
That's it. Killing, unwatchable.
I mean, I watched every episode of Killing. And you know what, though? I will say this.
Rubicon, they canceled. The show is amazing.
If anybody is sticking around for the Killing, I feel like this season they're going to change it up a little bit because they have to.
There's
a serial killer
now?
I don't know. But when in doubt,
add a serial killer to your show.
Let's take a minute. Let's take a minute and we'll say, because I think it's interesting about their ad campaign about like where these networks, like FX, AMC, what they're doing.
Oh, we have many FXs now.
Right, FX, FXX.
FXN.
FXM. And seriously, that's what I wanted to talk about how like they're branding themselves, you know?
Rebranding, so to speak.
Rebranding. It has always been about that, you know? But then, you know, there's something about like trying to do that without being known. And AMC is just like Mad Men. They're going to be over the top of it and be aware of it.
As opposed to before, it was sort of a mom and pop type operation. We have
stories
these 2
matter.
Shows. Stories matter. Stories. All of a sudden, stories doesn't fucking matter.
Something more.
You've got John Hamm narrating the American Airlines commercial. You have Joan advertising
for Johnny Walker.
It's like
man. They've
just completely been corporatized within 4 years or 5 years of the show premiering.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they have Walking Dead, which is horrible.
Yeah, I mean,
so bad.
Watch every episode of Walking Dead. I'm a fan of the action. I can't.
They don't know what to do with it on TV.
And that shows from behind the scenes with all these different showrunners being dropped.
And the one thing I can say about FX is that when they were sort of a mom and pop under the radar operation, their new shows are as good as their old shows.
Oh no, they're great.
AMC shows are pretty questionable. Hell on Wheels.
And I'm not a fan.
What is the other show? Kevin Smith's Comic Shop.
They also have this really weird show about the reality show about the called?
The fake
PI
or whatever?
No. What's it called when you... people at home.
The tax.
Oh, what are you doing?
Taxidermy.
Thank you. Yeah. This is really weird. I watched 5 minutes and I was like, we're shutting this off.
I'm out.
It's like, Unky would love this.
Anyway.
Life
imitating art.
No, I think
Sterling Cooper, there's the scene last episode where it's like Joan is like, I want to stay true and I want to think intelligently, but every day I go to the mailbox and there's just more money there.
I don't know what to do with it.
And now Sterling Cooper is sort of 2 floors. It is the inferno now. It's just expanding and levels.
Oh, that was creepy, that stairway.
Stairway.
It was creepy how they did that.
His office is literally underneath the stairway.
Yep, it's creepy. Yeah,
he is now on the lower level and Pete and everyone, all the account stuff on the top.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, you know, I think AMC, they do this thing, I have a memo from them about how they, like, do their, I don't know how to talk about this, how they do their, like, pitching and stuff like that.
This is good. People want to see the insider information.
This is what we bring
you in for.
No, AMC does this, they do this giant pitch session for their shows.
Yeah.
And they, like, it's interesting how they do it. But it's very funny because every TV network and stuff, and I'm no expert, I hope to be pitching soon, you know, and to report back. But the word on the street is that every network wants to hear this. We want a story that is the most original thing that we've never seen before, and we want it to be the same as our other shows. And it's like this huge contradiction of like, I have something that is so original, it's exactly like your other shows, but you'll never see it before, but you've seen it every week. It doesn't make sense. I think that AMC has gone a little to their heads.
Right.
You know, I think something more with the gold thing. I don't know. They're like really
very, very bad.
But anyway, yeah, no, FX Justified. The Americans is very, very good.
Yes.
I know a couple writers on The Americans, and they're
Louis
really excited. Oh, Louis is what girls want.
Even Wilfred is great.
Oh, Wilfred's fantastic.
It's amazing.
That show's great. I'm not a big fan of the
Sons of
the
Anarchy.
Oh, I like Sons of Anarchy, but it's a bit, it's kind of flown the coop
by
now.
Yeah, it's overstated its welcome.
Yeah, but I mean, I enjoy it, though.
Glad it exists. Show should exist.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and there's that new show, The Bridge, coming out for FX.
I don't know that one.
It's with Diane Kruger. Yeah, it's about, like, the Mexican border. It's about, like, two agents on the Mexican border, and there's a serial killer.
Not a serial killer.
Killing people. We had a discussion about serial killers before this. Hannibal, by the way. Beautifully shot.
Beautifully shot show.
It's going to be a procedural, but I heard that he has 7 seasons mapped out for that show.
Hopefully it gets canceled by then. But, you know, NBC, poor NBC, they need all the help they
need.
They
need it. Yeah, that's why I was telling everybody. I said, just put on your TV to NBC on Thursday night.
Why are we rooting for them, though? They canceled Worst Week.
That's true. They canceled freaking Awake.
They canceled, well, whatever.
Awake. No, I loved Awake. Awake was Kyle Killen, the guy who did Lone Star. We need to help him out.
Awake is on streaming on Netflix as of last week. Do check it out.
Please.
Anything else?
What else? Game of Thrones is back. Game of Thrones is back. Oh, Veep is on this weekend. I'm really excited about that.
Veep again.
Veep is great.
Be underwhelmed.
No, I like Veep. I think it's very good.
Veep is okay.
Game of Thrones, you guys had your own podcast.
You're not allowed to talk about that.
Game of Thrones is alright. It's doing well. I finally figured out who the characters are after 2 seasons. It took me that long to figure out and I literally, I'd have to pause and look it up because I was like, I don't know who these characters are. No, look, we're in a very good place right now. We have some amazing television shows on right now. Mad Men is just one of many. I'm glad that it's back. I didn't love this episode, but I'm glad that it's back. I'm very excited to see where this season goes and where, you know, the final season next season. And you have Breaking Bad, which is the final 8 episodes. It's a big deal. It's a huge deal. I have a huge theory that I figured out the other day on this. And
save this for the
Breaking Bad. I won't say it. But huge theory I'm very excited for. I don't care if they went to their heads. I'm excited for those 2 shows.
We'll see everybody back for the Breaking Bad podcast in June.
Yeah.
See you guys then. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks very much. Have a good one.
Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we drifted apart? Does your memory stray to a bright summer day? When I kissed you and called you sweetheart, do the chairs in your parlor seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep and picture me there? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. You know, someone said the world's a stage and each must play a part. Fate had me playing in love with you as my sweetheart. Act 1 was where we met. I loved you at first glance. You read your lines so cleverly and never missed a cue. Then came Act 2. You seemed to change. You acted strange. And why, I've never known. Honey, you lied when you said you loved me. And I had no cause to doubt you. But I'd rather go on hearing your lies than to go on living without you. Now the stage is bare, and I'm standing there with emptiness all around. And if he won't come back to me, then they can bring the curtain down. Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?